Digital banking is on the rise, with more and more Canadians tapping their credit cards and their debit cards and now even their phones to pay for goods and services. Cash is becoming less of a necessity. According to Payments Canada, cash use in Canada has declined by something like 30% since 2008. But are Canadians ready for a cashless future? There are certainly pros and cons to that question. Equitable Bank's president and CEO Andrew Moore is here to talk about why he believes it is time to go cashless. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce.
Why do you think now is the time to invest in a cashless future?
Well, I think technology's changed to the point that it's realistic. And it really feels to me there's huge advantages of being cashless. Particularly when I look at small businesses, for example, it's much easier not to have to deal with the cash in the till, the potential criminal risks that can be around that in the sense that people can steal the money. But also, just because from an efficiency perspective, tap a card, the money is immediately in a bank account where it can be used to pay suppliers, pay staff. People can work on looking after their customers rather than spending time kind of checking and reconciling the cash. So it all makes sense to me from an efficiency perspective.
Has there been a competitive dynamic that has pushed the cost down for small business, or are they still paying a reasonable fee to the card companies?
Well, I think they're paying too much, frankly, and I think that's something we need to address in Canada. The interchange fee on a credit card still seems too high to me to smaller, particularly to smaller merchants. I don't think I care as much about that when I'm dealing with big companies. But certainly when I pay my dry cleaners and I go to the local bookstore and I buy my coffee, I try to use my debit card, where the fees are much lower than they would be if I was just tapping a credit card.
There is an argument to be made that cash introduces friction into transactions, which can be a drag on the economy. Do you think that's a big issue? Is that something we should be thinking about and talking about?
I think it absolutely is. You know, when you think about it, it's almost like a medieval society in the sense we're actually handing around tokens of value and putting them in our wallet and moving them around. And clearly there's costs around reprinting banknotes and all of those kinds of things, as opposed to in an electronic society, we could just have that digital record being stored. It's certainly much cheaper to do that.
There are a number of downsides on the cashless front. For me, as someone who focuses exclusively on personal finance and has real concerns about how people manage their cash flow on a weekly, monthly or yearly basis, one of the research points that is particularly compelling to me is the notion that paying with cash introduces the pain of spending, and credit cards anesthetize the pain of spending. And there's lots of research about the magnitude of that, something like 20%. People spend 20% more when they're using a card instead of cash. What role do you think financial institutions like yours have to play in helping Canadians manage their cash flow so that they don't overspend?
I think what you're raising is a real issue, and we actually have to sort of change culturally so that cash, when we use a credit card, it feels the same as pulling cash out of your wallet. But I think that's just an evolution in society. We've learned to deal with lots of technology over the years and have learned to deal with it responsibly. So there is a learning. I'm not an unabashed supporter of just immediately going cashless. Let's recognize that that's a challenge and that needs education. And I think things like our banking apps can help that in terms of tracking total amounts you may have spent on certain things over the last few weeks and sort of keep a record of that to try and nudge you and say maybe you're spending over your budget limits. So we do provide some of those tools. I don't think banks are always the best people, frankly, to give consumer education about personal finance. I think, you know, the role that you play in personal finance educators are at least as important as the banks and probably, you know, sitting in a much more less biased position to do that. But I think as banks, we can provide tools that help the consumer do that, and hopefully you can help support those banks provide useful tools.
The two other downsides: one is research that shows people are more impulsive and buy more unhealthy things when they're paying with credit, and second, that they have a lower emotional attachment to what they bought, which is fascinating to me. And it's fascinating both because I can't believe it, but then at the very same moment, I think, oh yeah, of course that makes sense. If you were to count out the 20s, like I would have done or you would have done in our youth, and pay for something that you had been saving for, you can see that it would have more value. How do we help consumers make that translation? Because I think you're right in declaring that our end state will be a cashless world. My 9-year-old manages cash because she has allowance and I pay her in cash. Right. But in 10 years, that's going to be ridiculous.
Well, I think you know, effectively we can replicate some of this stuff on the apps, right? So it's really, we're doing lots of things socially on our cell phones. So why can't we manage money the same way in terms of having things that show spending limits that we're looking for on certain types of spending things? As you say, if we're spending money on fripperies that we shouldn't be, maybe we can kind of capture that as part of the app solution. Certainly within EQ Bank, we're able to divide into sub-accounts, and then you could, you know, arguably sort of put $50 aside every month if that's what you plan to spend on coffee. And when it gets down to zero, that you know you've reached your caffeine limit for the month. So that's deliberately why that application is available for you. You could call it your coffee account and automatically have the money going in there every month. So I would say, though, it's a bit of a DIY exercise at this point. And I think sometimes as bankers, we make it a little hard for consumers to things that really resonate with the way you want to think about your life, right?
Why do you even have a business? And I ask this with all seriousness, in that the big banks have all the money. They have the enormous brand power that goes with their marketing spend and the tens of thousands of employees that they have. How has EQ been able to carve out a meaningful niche given the massive competitive dynamics you're up against?
Well, you know, yes, they're very powerful banks, but we have a unique position. So we position ourselves as Canada's challenger bank. We pay a very high rate of interest just on cash sitting in the account. And to your point, you know, one of the great advantages is you get 2.3% on your money until you actually buy that cup of coffee. So you're actually getting, admittedly, it's only pennies a day, but it all adds up. And so by having an unabashed different approach than the big banks, then we can have a lower cost structure. For example, we'll never send you a bank statement. All the big banks would offer you that choice. Mm. That takes cost out of running our bank, and we can actually be profitable and hopefully offer a value to the consumer that's not being offered by everybody else.
Younger people, not even millennials, but the generation that followed them, they've grown up in a world in which their life is largely digital. How do you think about the demographic that is over the age of 50, 60, 70? Are they your customers? Do you want them to be your customers?
Certainly they can be. I think it's a question of attitude. There are lots of 60, 70-year-olds that love technology and are happy to engage on that basis. But if you really need the comfort of walking into a bank branch, we're not the one for you, frankly, if you want to go and have a chat with somebody in a bank branch. If you want to pick up the phone and talk to our call center, we have great people that can help you there. But we're never going to send you a statement. You're never going to have a checkbook with EQ Bank. But if you want to interact digitally, and that's how you think about life, there's no reason why somebody in their 70s can't do that as well as somebody in their 15s.
How do you think about, this is a two-part, how do you think about security and how do you think about privacy in the context of a cashless society? In some ways, I'm sure there are big advantages because you don't have to worry about your wallet getting stolen because you just cancel your card in 5 seconds, but there's some disadvantages too.
Oh, I think on the security side, there's things we need to do. And I recognize you did a podcast recently on open banking. And So there are things we need to do with more secure APIs to button down the security. Although I would say even today, it's already better than it was in the old days of carrying cash around. There's less cash being lost. We're immediately able to disable a bank account if there's been some compromise. And we can recognize through patterns of behavior that it's likely being compromised. So I think that's already moving in the right direction. You know, there's very few bank robberies anymore, frankly, because there's
right.
no money sitting in the bank.
Right.
So I think that's something that is, although one might, when there are fraudulent takeovers of accounts and so on, it's bad news. In reality, overall, the banking system's becoming more secure. I think on the privacy side as well, we need to be very careful about these things, but we do have biometric identification on the cell phones. It is actually pretty hard to crack into the banking systems. And I think there's a broader conversation, obviously, with people like Facebook and Google and how much they're doing to protect our information. Mm. Frankly, there's much broader leaks of information there, and hopefully we'll all kind of converge where we can choose the levels of privacy that we require. And many of us may choose to be extremely private. Others may be more comfortable with data being shared.
Andrew, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate
thanks, Bruce.
It. And I call on you to stand up for the cash flow questions I have raised here. Andrew Moore, the president and CEO of Equitable Bank.